in the world of sports. She's got next. Next. Here's Jordan Robinson.
Hey, hey, how's everybody doing? Welcome to another episode of She's Got Next. I'm Jordan Robinson, your host, and I'm women's sports number one fan. It's true. It's a fact. Today, we have a lot of women's sports stories to cover. We've got the latest headlines, the most up-to-date news, and we have an amazing interview waiting for you later on in the show with a professional athlete and ESPN broadcaster. So make sure to stick around for that. It's really great. In case you missed last week's episode, please go back and look it up because it was a National Women's Soccer League mega episode jam-packed with two interviews that really encapsulated the league right now. First, I talked to Meg Linehan, senior writer for The Athletic, and she gave us the 411 on the standings heading into the second half of the NWSL season. The Kansas City Current are still the team to beat, sitting comfortably in that number one seed, but Orlando Pride sneaking up and can pose great competition just like they did years before. They actually square off on Saturday, August 16th. So depending on when you're listening to this, make sure to tune in to see the two best teams duke it out. We also touched on the much anticipated return of Trinity Rodman for the Washington Spirit. She's been rehabbing an injury, but in her first match back, she made the game-winning goal in extra time over the Portland Thorns. I urge you to go on social media and watch her post-game interview. She was moved to tears just talking about the adversity she's gone through to get to this point. The Spirit, they are sitting in third place at the time of this recording. So having their Olympian star back could be huge in the second half of the season. Go Trinity. We're so happy to see you back on the field. Okay, so that's what we covered about the now. But what about the future of the NWSL? I also got to talk to Dome Guasque, the general manager of the expansion team who will be joining the league next year, the Boston Legacy FC. He discussed those first steps that happen when building a franchise from the bottom up, how investors are a huge piece to success, and what the future holds for women's soccer in the United States. I found it super interesting how Dome spoke on the fact that the NWSL doesn't have a college draft or an expansion draft. So instead of being limited to a certain number of players to choose from, they can go out and sign free agents right away or recruit international players to make their team competitive immediately. It's so different from other leagues in that way, and I just find that super fascinating. So again, if you haven't listened to that episode, you still can. Search for She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson wherever you get your podcasts. All righty. On today's episode of She's Got Next, we're diving into such a cool topic, flag football. I know you have become aware of this worldwide phenomenon that is this sport. It's the fastest growing sport, especially among young girls. And I've become kind of obsessed, and I know you would too if you watch some of the games. So first, I want to give some background on two types of flag football. So there's the youth side with the NFL flag as the major organization there. And then there's the professional side with adults competing for their country, which will lead to what we get to see for the first time at the Olympics in 2028. So let's start with NFL flag and the youth sports boom. From ages 4 to 17, there are leagues and teams all across the country and the world that compete. It's no contact football. So that's first and foremost. The quote unquote tackle your opponent, to be able to do that, you pull one or both flags off. There are also other rules to keep players safe, like no run zones on the field and eliminating fumbles altogether. So the cool thing is, youth participation in sports had declined 13% over the last decade, which breaks my heart because youth basketball is where my love for the game started. But flag football is changing that by being the fastest growing sport in the U.S. The number of 6 to 12 year olds playing has increased by 38% to more than 1.5 million since 2015. And NFL Flag is leading the charge as the largest flag football league in the U.S. with more than 1,800 leagues in all 50 states. This leads to the NFL Flag Championships every July on ESPN. That's how I got sucked in. The high school girls varsity team who won, the Texas Fury, aka the Texans, took home the title with majority of their players going on to play in college on scholarships for flag football. It's now an official high school girls sport in 15 states with many NAIA and NCAA D2, D3 schools offering scholarships for collegiate athletics. And now there's an option to even go pro and a chance to rep your country at different world competitions throughout the year, like the America's Flag Continental Championships and the World Games happening now in China. The American women's national team, they've dominated. They've won plenty of gold medals over the years. Hopefully, we can keep that going with the Olympics coming up. Later on, you'll hear from Rebecca Landa, ESPN Deportes play-by-play for Monday Night Football. She's a reporter and defender for the Mexican women's national flag football team. She's going to shine more light on the growth of this sport while also telling us her journey as a professional athlete and whether she's going to make a run at the Olympics in 2028. But before we get to our guests, let's dive into the Women's Sports Week recap. As promised last week, we're going to spend some more time on the WNBA this week for our recap section. There have been wild mid-season trades, standings of, you know, top to bottom. They're in a tizzy. Everyone's freaking out. And teams are trying to fight and crawl and scratch their way into the playoffs, which start September 14th. So this is very much the last push, the last full month of WNBA basketball to make sure that you are one of those top eight teams in the playoffs. So first, let's check in on some of the players who are traded at the midseason deadline. Typically, there is not a ton of movement in this part of the season, but boy, did that change this season. First, the Dallas Wings traded Dejounte Carrington to the Minnesota Lynx for Diamond Miller and an injured Carly Samuelson. Carrington has been thriving on the number one seeded Lynx. She fits in seamlessly because of the hustle plays she makes. Minnesota was already the number one defense and offense, so she just elevated what they already had going on. Also, she was with a Dallas team that was losing. Like, they have not won a lot of games this season. They are second to last in the standings. Now she's on a team that's the number one team in the league. The Lynx are officially the first team to clinch the playoffs a full month before the postseason begins. And now it's a full-on race for second place. But Dejounte has been such a key piece to their success. And I know come playoffs, come finals, she's going to be a big part of this team. Next, we saw the Washington Mystics trade Brittany Sykes to the Seattle Storm for Alicia Clark and a 2026 first-round pick. Brittany Sykes went to the Storm and completely turned into the number one offensive weapon. In only her second game and her first start as a Storm player, she had 27 points, including a huge basket to tie the game late against the Sparks. But the Seattle Storm are on a five-game losing streak at the time of this recording and somehow are almost out of the playoff contention despite having a scary good lineup. So not sure what's going on there. They need to turn it around. They have one of the easiest schedules coming up, so hopefully this rough patch is over. Alicia Clark, who was the other player in this trade, spoke recently that she actually wanted out of Seattle. There was a locker room tiff and she didn't feel like she was being utilized in the best way. Drama. If you've been listening to the show since the beginning of the summer, Seattle Storm have had some drama. That's what they do. It's kind of been swirling around. So this comes at no surprise, but happy she's with the Washington Mystics again and could potentially end her career there. again, the Mystics now have three first round picks in next year's loaded draft. Two of their rookies were already all-stars. So Mystics fans, I know you're sad about Brittany Sykes leaving, but the future is very, very bright. There are plenty of games to go, but tired legs, injuries, and strength of schedule are all major factors into which team will peak at the right time. All right, I hope you guys feel caught up after the break. Back to flag football. We're going to hear from Rebecca Landa, ESPN Deportes broadcaster and pro flag footballer on the other side. This is She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
From Odyssey Sports, it's She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
Today's guest is ESPN Deportes, play-by-play announcer, reporter, and defensive player for the Mexican Women's National Flag Football Team, Rebecca Landa. Rebecca, welcome to She's Got Next.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited to be here talking about flag football. It's just such a great moment to talk about our sport. So thank you for the invitation, Jordan.
You are so welcome. The invitation comes because my husband and I were glued to the TV during the NFL Flag Championships all weekend long. We had so many questions, but we were so entertained by these young girls and boys really getting after it. And the championships, the stakes of everything. So that's where our obsession began. But if our listeners are maybe new to NFL flag, how would you describe the sport?
I would describe the sport as dynamic, fun. You're going to see some of the best athletes that you've ever seen on the field, women and men. Very also like social media attractive because the field is so short. There's so many ways you can promote this sport. And I would say the future, I think flag football is going to be a huge sport moving forward. It already is, but it's going to grow even more. So yeah, I'm glad you got into it fairly early, you know, for a lot of us, it's been years, but in the global dynamic, it's kind of just starting.
Well, I want to talk about that growth because that was something that really stuck out to us watching is just how it's one of the fastest growing sports across the world, not even across the country, and specifically for girls, participation for young girls and having the opportunity to go to college now with scholarships. So just talk about that growth and how it is so important for youth girls to get in.
Yeah, I would say another word to describe flag football would be like inclusivity, very easy access, right? And that has a lot to do with the growth that we've seen from flag football because you need a field, some flags, and a ball, you know, different from American football where you need so many people, but you also need helmets and equipment and a big field and goalposts and all that stuff. Flag football is easier to access. And that's why we're seeing it also in so many other countries. So a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, we had our first Continental African Championship, which was won by Nigeria in both the men and the women. We have America's, of course, championship. We have Europe's championship. We have Asian championship. So it's growing so much because of that easy access and because anybody really can play flag football. Like it doesn't matter the body type that you have. There's always something you can add to the field, add to the sport. And about how important it is for girls and women to play this sport. We all know that sport transforms, right, Jordan? Like we've seen it in so many platforms. And flag football, like I said, is a sport that it's inclusive. Also, it's a sport that empowers. It's a sport that creates community. And I'm so happy that in the U.S. now it's been sanctioned in 17 states, including Ohio, where the NFL flag championships were being played, which means that all those states in their high school might be the first opportunity girls have to get to know the sport. forward, right? But then also it's very exciting to see how the colleges have been getting involved. NCAA, the NFL has been talking about opening a professional flag football league to accompany the NFL league. So yeah, it feels like we're just getting started. We've made it to the Olympics now for LA 2028. Looking forward to Sydney 2032 or Brisbane, it might be. So yeah, it's just getting started. But when we talk about girls football, and we know the statistics are that sometimes when girls get to high school is when they start dropping out of sports. They're getting into other things. Maybe a lot of the peer pressure of doing something different that's not very feminine, or, well, we know that flag football is another space where they can keep playing sports and get those opportunities to take it to their colleges as well.
What a cool opportunity to be able to play in high school and have that opportunity for college. Look, I was the little girl that when my dad coached Pop Warner football, my brother was playing, I was like, I want to play football. I know all the plays. I've been to every practice, like, put me in, coach. And it was this idea that my dad was like, no. My little girl is not playing tackle football. So it also feels like this alternative to tackle football, also because of safety reasons, right? Maybe this is a better opportunity for parents to put their child into football. They love football, but flag is a different opportunity.
Yes, of course. And we can talk about it from the female or male perspective, right? Like, we know there's a lot of concussions in the NFL. A lot of parents are pulling their kids out. But this is a great opportunity to get really close to the sport. And once, you know, brains are developed and bodies are a little bit more prepared for those hits, then kids can get involved into American football. But the crazy thing about flag football is, because of all the opportunities that it's gaining, there are a lot of kids now, for example, in Mexico, that are not even planning on playing American football. They're saying, like, no, I don't want to play American football. I want to play flag football, because they know they can go to the Olympics, because they know they can get scholarships at colleges. So it's been like a big transition in just a couple of years.
Wow. I love that. Well, if you have the pipeline, especially if they're talking about a professional league, now it's not just, oh, we're just playing this for fun as a rec league. No, you can actually turn pro and make money off of this, and all the different gear and different advertisement opportunities. It's a real sport. It's a real thing.
We can talk about, like, there was an I don't know if you saw him, but there was a player at NFL Flag Championships. He's 14 years old. He already has a contract with one of the card companies. You know, you sign cards and they sell cards.
Yes.
So he already has like a big deal with them, and he's only 14. They are picturing him to get into like tackle football and going to college. But if he decides not to, there might be opportunities for him there. Right now, he's a flag football player, and he's already doing pretty well. So yeah, the future is bright for all these young athletes that are seeing themselves having a future within flag football.
Okay, let's talk about your journey personally with flag football, because my favorite thing is looking at your Instagram and seeing how you are dolled up for TV and on camera. And then the next photo is you with the mask on and you are in full defensive mode for the Mexican national flag football team. So what were your beginnings and your introductions to flag football?
It was kind of the same as what you were mentioning. So when I was about 8 years old, I saw Remember the Titans, great movie. I was like, Dad, I want to play this sport. So I've been playing sports my whole life. I was like, Dad, I really want to play this sport. He was like, sure, let's go see like where you could play in Mexico, of course, right? So we went to this like local club and they were like, Rebe, you're too old now. I was about 13 by then. It can be dangerous for you playing at this age. I think the limit for girls playing tackle football was like 8 years old or 10 years old. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to be like a casual fan. And I became a very intense fan of the local club. My brother was playing there. There was the college that was in my town also had a very prominent tackle football program. So I was just a fan of football, really. And then a friend of mine came to me and he was like, hey, I want to invite you to the intramurals of my university. it's called to play a sport called tochito, which is like touch football would be the translation in English, like Got touch it. Football. And I was like, what's tochito? He was like, you're going to love it. So I went there and there were women and there was flags and there was a football. And I was like, this is the place for me. So immediately I fell in love with it. A couple of years later, I found out there was a Mexican national team. They had won the gold medal at the World Championships. So I was like, wow, this is great. By then, there wasn't like big social media. Maybe we had like Facebook or something, but it wasn't, as you can see, flag football now being like everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard to really get information about how to get into the national team and stuff like that. But then to make the story short, when I found out like how the process was to be able to be in the national team, I was like, I'm not going to be able to do that once I'm in college and all that stuff. So my plan in general was I'm going to work at ESPN. I'm going to get a job at ESPN. That was like the first dream. I'm going to get a job at ESPN. I'm going to have to move to Mexico City where the whole process of national team building happens. And then that's when I'm going to get into the national team. So I started working a lot on getting into ESPN. I got in ESPN and then I hired a personal coach to prepare me to get into the national team. And that's when I had my first opportunity. I was national team selection for 2018 Panama World Championship. And at the same time, I was working at ESPN as a host for several shows. So it's all kind of worked together. My work at ESPN and flag football has always been intertwined until this year that I decided that I didn't want to be in the national team this year. I needed a little bit of a break, but I'm also using my platform at ESPN to shed some light on what's going on and flag football in general around the world. I've talked about Spain. I've talked about the U.S. I'm talking about Mexico this week, that they're going to be defending their gold medal at the World Champion at the World Games in China. So yeah, that's kind of how it all worked together and allowed me to be in the national team for 7 years, which was really cool. Yeah.
Dream wow. What a story. I love how you had a plan, ESPN first, and then I'm going to make the national team. And then it just worked out. It always works out when it's meant to be. So yeah. I love stories like that. How did you decide defense, like your specific position that you play in flag? Because I always, you know, I'm a basketball player, so you got to kind of play both. But I'm always enamored by football, where it's a different mindset, whether you're on offense, whether you're a quarterback, whether you're on defense. So how did you choose your position?
So basically what happens when you start playing flag football is that you don't know a lot of like the nuances or like little details. So they always would see like, what's your best quality? And mine was speed. So when we talk about defense, rusher would be like the obvious, where you don't even have to know coverages and stuff. Like you have to focus on the rusher. When we're talking about amateur playing, right? Once you get to the national stage, it changes so much. But when you're just starting to play flag football, being a rusher is like an easy position to start with. So I had speed. So I was a rusher and a runner when it comes to offense. Because also, I'm pretty sure you saw it in the NFL flag championships, you get to play both ways most of the time, right? Yeah. So I would play both ways. And then I transitioned from rusher to safety. And in the offense, I transitioned from runner to wide receiver and then to quarterback. So basically, I've played every position there is in flag football. But when I got to the national team, normally they don't promote you playing several positions in the offense and the defense. They would want you to play like one specific position, right? That's going to change now because of the format of how Olympics are going to be played. But in general, they would say like, this is your position and we might use you for some things, but you really need to specify on one. So when I got to the national tryouts, I saw the quarterback line and it was like 50 girls. I was like, no, I'm not going to compete with 50 girls. And I saw the safety and she had been in the national team for like, I don't know, 8 years. So I was like, I'm not going to compete with her for the position. I know that's not smart. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be playing cornerback. Sure. So I transitioned into cornerback, and then I was having kind of like a struggle of like coverages and understanding the system and stuff like that. So I told the coach, like, I also play as a rusher. So they're like, okay. So I started playing both things, and that's how I got my first ticket to the World Championships in Panama 2018. But then I started being very dominant as a rusher and understanding the system and getting to know the quarterbacks of the world stage better. So knowing how to attack them and stuff like that. So then for my last World Championships, which were in Finland of last year, my coach told me, I might use you as a corner, but I need you to prepare only as a rusher. So my whole preparation specifically was for a rusher, because for the previous 5 years, I had to train both things as a corner and as a rusher. And it's harder because, like, you know, as a rusher, you're moving forward, and as a corner, you're moving backwards. Mm. It's so different. So most of my career, I played both positions. But for Finland, they said, we want you as a rusher. And it was really exciting to me to be super specific to that. And I also think when it comes to personality, I'm more of a defensive player. I'm like really strong-minded. I'm very able to focus just on the next play, you know, and not knowing what's going to happen, because that's the reality. Like, I think for defensive players, you need a special mindset. When you're talking about offensive players, you know exactly what you're going to do. What's your role within the play? And when you're in a defense, you have no idea. You have to be prepared for everything. And I think that takes a different type of resiliency when it comes to defensive players and defensive mindset. So one of the coaches once told me, like, you're totally defense personality and mindset. We're going to just stick you there on the defense. And I really love it. I love being part of the defense. It's a very special group. Communication is key. Energy is key, you know, so I think you develop other abilities that maybe you wouldn't, or I wouldn't, if I was an offensive player.
Mm-hmm. I love that. See, I told you it's a different mindset, and you have defense all over you. So that is so, so cool to see how that transition and how you started out by playing multiple positions to find kind of your niche. So you talked about how you're taking a year off this season, but we mentioned a few times the Olympics right around the corner, 2028. Yeah. Are you gearing up to be a part of the Olympic team or make a run for the national team there?
Yeah, I think I would love to. I think it was also kind of part of my decision of why I thought I needed a break right now. I was having like this kind of toxic relationship with flag football, which is horrible to have with a sport that you love. And in my case, it's really hard. And I guess in a lot of flag football players' case is really hard, because even though we're like professional athletes and we're acting like it, even though we're not getting paid, you know, it takes a toll on you to have another job that's also very, I would say in Spanish, exigente. It demands a lot from you, right?
Yeah.
And my work does that, like play calling Monday Night Football in Spanish, being a woman in the position that I'm in, what that responsibility entails, and then also having this responsibility with the national team, it started being too much for me. I also live far away from my family, so I could never really travel to see them or spend time with them. So yeah, it started to take a toll on me, like emotionally and stuff. And I was like, if I want to make it to the Olympics, I really need to take a break now, because if not, I'm going to be so burnt out. It's not going to happen. But I was also open to the idea of discovering the process and maybe not wanting to come back. But it's been really nice to like live this period of my life and enjoying it and knowing that I'm living my truth, but also feeling the excitement of wanting to come back in the future. So it's just been beautiful. Yeah. So it's part of the plan. I never know what like the future entails, but for now I really, have the faith and the hope that I'm going to have the time, that I'm going to have the energy, that things at work are going to, you know, align for me to follow this dream.
I can totally see you dominating on the field and then the next game reporting sideline for the coverage of
exactly both ways. I can do everything, guys.
You could do everything. For the Olympics, though, I know you will be on the national team for Mexico, but who are some of kind of the big hitters when we think about the Olympics and you kind of think about who would be your biggest competition during that time?
Yeah, of course, the USA. So we have a big rivalry with the United States, and we won the gold medal from the World Games, but all of the other finals from all the other competitions have been Mexico against the U.S. and U.S. has beat us. So that silver medal that you see, that's Israel 2021. And that's exactly before the World Games. And then the U.S. beat us in that. And then World Games, we got gold. And then Continentals, we got silver against the U.S. And then in the World Championship, we got silver against the U.S.
Oh, so, my goodness.
You know, the U.S. is right there. They're the number one team in the world. That's the truth. They're an amazing, amazing team. Because of that World Game situation where we got the gold medal, they started adjusting a lot of how they did their process and how they selected players. So really, they've only gotten better within time. And it's really exciting to see them and watch them play. They're amazing athletes and very kind people as well. And then obviously I would say Mexico, which right now we're ranked number two in the world. And then things start getting super exciting after that, because for example, in Finland, Japan won the bronze medal, and Japan hadn't been getting medals at all in the past. So this is the beautiful thing about flag football, that a lot of the countries see an opportunity, they start investing, they start growing the sport, and then you see them in a couple of years make a big difference, right? So Japan is one of the teams to worry about. They're super creative in how they play. They're so fun to watch. It's like seeing another type of flag football. I think Austria has always kind of been around there, the top four teams in the world. Panama used to be one of those like powerhouses, and now they're kind of outside that area. The thing with the Olympic Games is that, for example, the World Games are going to start being played on the 14th of this month, and only the best eight teams of the world go. China is going to be part of that because they are the hosts. So really only the seven best teams in the world. But when it comes to the Olympics, there's only going to be six teams. So you can say it's going to be the U.S., it's going to be Mexico, might be Japan, Austria. It could be something like Great Britain or Spain if they decide to do the process. Like, it's so interesting because so many teams can make a big difference to get to the Olympics in a couple of years. So I don't have an answer for you.
No, that was so helpful.
Like Mexico, the U.S., and maybe like Austria or Japan. Canada is also an amazing team. The thing with Canada is that they don't do all of the processes all the time. So we might see them like at the, world championships, but we might not see them at the continental games. Mm-hmm. And to be able to get to the Olympics, you need to add up all those points. So I would say Canada should be there, but it depends if they do the whole process.
Got it. All I heard was you don't like the U.S. because those are your rivals. So that's what I will be looking forward to in the gold medal.
No,
game.
I said they are great people and they have a great system. But yeah, they are our biggest rivals. They are. Yeah. And we feed off each other, which is really cool because they get better because we get better, and we get better because they get better. We're always competing. So people from the U.S. are coming to Mexico to our national tournaments and competing here. And we are doing that as well. And we go and compete over there. So we know each other very well.
I was going to say, iron sharpens iron. That's exactly. Always how this process works, especially when you're trying to get the first gold medal in Olympic history for women's flag football. That is going to be so, so huge. Okay. Cheering you on for that. I know I'm ready for the game to start now, but you're like, okay, time out. I need to train. We need to get everything in order. But yeah, that is super exciting and something to look forward to. And you mentioned kind of your job and everything that you do with ESPN. And you have made history as one of the first women to do play-by-play for Monday Night Football and have such a cool, cool job. It's so awesome to be able to work for ESPN. One question I always love to ask is, when you are a professional athlete and you have a job in sports, how do you feel like your athletic life or your love for sports bleeds into your job, and kind of vice versa? How do those complement each other?
Yes, I think it helps me so much. I have like this very particular view, right? And I, in the US, I understand you guys have like a lot of former athletes working at ESPN. But when it comes to Mexico, we don't have a lot of former NFL athletes that work at ESPN. So when it comes to the people that I work with, maybe I am one of two athletes on the team, which is very unique for what we do, right? When it comes to American football, because if you talk about soccer, it's another type of, we have a lot of former players, right? But when it comes to American football, I'm maybe one of two that work at ESPN. So that gives me a great insight on what like the player might be thinking, how they're going through their emotions, what it feels to be within a locker room where there's pressure, where there's expectation, where there's also great teammate relationships, the dynamics of a team when it comes to high level competition. So all of that I try to bring into my work. And the other way around, it allows me to be super analytical of certain situations and see it from a different perspective. Like, I don't know, within the team, if there's something that's managed in a way, I try to analyze it from not a player perspective, but yeah, from like a communication perspective or like an analytical perspective. Is this the best way to do it? How would I have done it different? When it comes to being an athlete, we also do a lot of scouting, which is something that we do when we're doing play call, right? So both ways, it's helped me a lot to see like, okay, this is the system that they play. These are the playmakers. How would you play against that? How would you adjust? Asking questions also from the athlete perspective. And in many of the things that I do, for example, in tennis, a lot of the tennis players know that I've been an athlete and that I am an athlete. So when it comes to communication, it helps me a lot when I do interviews. Like, there's a different level of connection to them because they know that I know what they are going through or how they feel. So yeah, I just love having those two sides of me and that they were intertwined for so long, because I was calling Monday Night Football and I wasn't a former athlete. I was an athlete, right?
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, that's very curious. And I feel very privileged to be able to do both things at the same time. I don't think a lot of people can or have done it. Yeah.
I feel like you're at work studying and you're like, okay, I'm going to go try that move on the field tomorrow. Like, you have that ability
to kind of
do both. And that is so cool and so fascinating to learn. And last thing, as we wrap up here, I read that your mom was also a tennis star while you were growing up and super into sports. Your dad played sports. But how was it to have a female sports role model in your home?
Yeah, really amazing. And I must say my grandmother as well, my mom's mom. So I inherited the love of sports from my mom and her mom, which is not very typical, right? And I think it was beautiful. I was very lucky because I never really understood like the gender gap in my house, which a lot of kids do. And a lot of kids don't get the same opportunities. But because my mom was an athlete and she had always been, and my grandmother also, like in the 60s, she had tried to get to the Olympics as a horse rider. She said she didn't have a good enough horse to get there. but she played golf and she played tennis. And you would go to her house and you would see like all the trophies that she would earn and that my mother earned as well. So, yeah, I think it was very empowering for me. Like, I never considered, because I'm a girl, I shouldn't be playing sports. Like, and going back to like the beginning of this conversation and how important flag football is getting into high schools. When I got to high school, my friends didn't practice sports. And I lost a lot of friends because I was into sports and they weren't. Mm-hmm. But the fact that I have like this person that's saying like, you're on the right path, just keep going, do what you love, and feeling that acceptance and motivation at home really allowed me to pursue my dreams, right? So yeah, I think my mother is like the biggest influence when it comes to sports. I'm very lucky to have her, and my grandmother as well. She passed now, but I do feel her presence when it comes to sports, and she would be always like watching my games and cheering me on. So yeah, I feel lucky that I had a mom that always pushed me to do sports, and knowing all of the values that I would have, you know, all of the security that I would have in myself, all the amazing friends that I would meet, all the opportunities to travel around the world, all the qualities that it would also give me for like a work environment, because that's what sports do. So yeah, lucky girl to have a mom
lucky
like that.
Lucky girl. Oh, I didn't know it went back generations. And I love if you guys are listening on radio, she has her trophies angled behind her and positioned behind her. So I just love that imagery. That is so powerful. And I feel like this episode was a perfect example for young girls, get into flag football, because it is growing and the opportunity is there. And it's so much fun to watch, so entertaining. And you get so many benefits from playing sports, which is what we talk about every week on this show. Rebecca, thank you so, so much for sharing your story. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jordan. It was really great meeting you, and I'm going to be listening. I'm going to say it like that. I'm a woman now, but as a girl, you're healing my inner girl. Thank you so much for doing stuff like this for the future generations.
Thank you. Thank you again to Rebecca. She's so good. And I learned so much about the process of flag football and everything that it entails. Next, we'll cover some business in women's sports headlines. You're listening to She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
Let's get down to business. Here's what's happening in the business of women's sports.
Welcome back to She's Got Next. Now it's time for Let's Get Down to Business, where we talk about the business of women's sports. A couple headlines I wanted to hit this time around. The 2025 U.S. Open will be the most lucrative tournament in history. You guys know this is my favorite song. With singles champions earning a record $5 million, up 20% from last year. The prize money is higher than the other three major tennis tournaments, Wimbledon, the Australian Open, and the French Open. I love it. Tennis continues to be a leader in making sure that individual sports and professional women's athletes get paid. Love it. Another headline, Unrivaled, the off-season 3-on-3 league, Women's Pro Basketball League, announced that they have already signed nearly 90% of its 2026 roster. It begins in January, and it's making moves to expand and pay players even more. The league will grow from 36 to 42 players next season, adding 6 developmental spots for injury substitutions. That was huge last year. Player salaries will increase from last season's $220,000 average, despite adding more players. So they're saying, nope, we're still giving you more money, despite more players coming on. Unrivaled, they continue to set a new standard for what's possible in women's professional sports. I love it. And lastly, the Pro Volleyball Federation and Major League Volleyball are joining forces under Major League Volleyball. So they will both be MLV, bringing together the two leagues with the most similar model. That leaves MLV in competition with League One Volleyball and Athletes Unlimited, which runs a different and completely different model and a different time of the season. MLV announced $100 million in commitment funding on its launch. It already has experienced owners coming into the mix, like MLS's DC United is launching their own team in Washington, D.C., and the Sacramento Kings owner is going to lead a California owners group. So I love that professional volleyball kind of started fragmented, but now they're starting to join forces to make sure that the money and the notoriety and popularity can go one way. All this means is that more money is going into women's sports. And I love that for us as fans and also for the athletes. Well, that's all the time that we have. Thank you for listening to She's Got Next. I'm Jordan Robinson, and I will see you next time.